Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the show. We have a great show tonight, and it's all about tone. And we're going to talk about some of the secrets of tone. And a lot of it, especially for electric guitar and bass, it's in the pickups. I'm very happy to welcome Larry Pollock from Aero Pickups, Aero Instruments. He makes custom pickups for a variety of pretty well-known artists, and he really knows his stuff. I've been talking with him over the last couple of weeks, and I've been educated extremely, if I can put it that way. Also joining me in studio to demonstrate some of the pickups is returning guest Jimmy Hewitt from the soulguitarist.com. He's been on a couple of times on our show. And also a new guest that came in, a very impressive bass player, David Inamine. Is that me saying that right? Inamine. And also Susan Scheller, who was on the show a couple weeks, just finished doing a show over on Accent on TV. So I invited her to come in and sit in with us. So anyway, welcome everybody. It's really an honor to have everybody here tonight. Larry, give me a little bit. You have a very interesting background, and getting it, what eventually got you into working, because you do more than pickups. You've done mods and things for people, for their amps and all sorts of things. I mean, I was looking at your bio, and you've built recording equipment. You've worked on microphones, tone controls, pretty much the whole gambit. So give us a little background, and I'm going to ask you about your previous employment before you became a pickup maker. Actually, you can mention that.
All right. Well, first, I just should say it's Aero Instrument with no S at the end.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Somebody else, it's okay. There's another company that makes aerospace gear. But, yeah, I've worked on a lot of different audio equipment only because I'm interested in the whole, you know, electronic spectrum of it. All I do is the audio part. I don't make musical instruments. And so just from the time I was really small, just built gear. And, you know, my first guitar amp at 13, and then, you know, on and on through time. And then became an engineer at some point and, you know, still played music, but wasn't making, you know, electronic gear and for instruments. And then found that I needed to combine engineering with music or I wasn't going to survive as a human for just me. And that's how I ended up, you know, starting Aero. And Aero started as an amp manufacturer and then quickly became a pickup manufacturer because that's what sold. You know, whatever was selling, that's what I wanted to make. And
well, were you seeing a problem with the pickups that were out there, or were people coming to you and saying this doesn't work, can you fix it, or how did that come about?
Yeah, that's both of those. My first pickups I made for a guitar company called Lentz Electric Guitar, and Scott needed some pickups, and he said, you know, I don't like what I'm getting, you know, you're a smart guy, and the honest truth is he gave me the first parts that made my first winding machine. You know, mm-hmm. we've been collecting some together. And then I found that there was a market in bass which was totally uncovered in many, many ways. And what had happened in the bass world was a lot of custom builders had come along and they had changed the Fender equation. They had made instruments that no longer had the same string spacing. And what string spacing is it's the distance between any two strings over the pickup itself, not at the physical bridge. And so they had changed the bridge. There were four factors that affected that, the string spacing at the saddles, the string spacing at the nut, where the pickups are and the scale length of the instrument mm-hmm. all mattered. And they changed the parameter of the pickup so that a standard pickup never didn't line up with the strings anymore. And what started to happen was they weren't being sensed. And we're talking about the strings weren't being sensed by the pickup. And we're talking about pole piece pickups.
Mm-hmm.
People who came along with blade magnet pickups that seemed to solve this problem, but actually ended up causing other problems. And, you know, without going into that, right now at least, we started to make custom string spacing pickups because I already had the technology to make any string spacing. So I said, well, okay, I'll just, whatever the guy needs, you measure it, I'll make it. And then it started to be whatever shape you need, you measure it, I'll make it. And then yeah. it started to be whatever parameters you need, you tell me and we'll construct them and we'll build a line of pickups for your instruments. You know, it started to get out of control. And today, I know I make more than perhaps 600 different models of all kinds of different things with options on top of options. And, mm-hmm. you know, so you can buy all kinds of different things from me. And it seems like a lot. I always tell people when they're done speaking to me, is your head still spinning around, you know?
But, yeah. Well, it wasn't, you know, I know for myself when I've seen people, we used to mod guitars a lot. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you put a humbucker on a Fender, you had a tilted or the spacing was different.
That's right.
So we had, you know, you'd see these guys with the pickups slanted here and there and everywhere, and they didn't fit. And we didn't know that until we tried it, you know,
that's
and
right.
it was kind of hit and miss. But you're right. It was even in the guitar world, it was a problem. Now you can get a Fender spaced pickup, now a humbucker, or you can, I mean, there's other companies that, you know, just, or even Gibson and Fender, they make it now for their guitars. But
it doesn't solve the problem. Because they're building sort of what they had, like for instance a Gibson's like a 10 millimeter string spacing pickup.
Mm-hmm.
They use that in the neck and the bridge. Well, it might be 10.5 at the bridge, maybe 10 at the neck, or maybe it's 10 in the middle. And so the two are maybe a compromise. In a Stratocaster, the string spacing is 10.4 millimeters, and the middle pickup is 10.6 in a standard American standard. 10.2 and 11.1. It's very different. And if you look at a waveform of a pickup that is where the magnet is misaligned, you'll see it's squished to one side, which means you're getting distortion. And so the single greatest thing you can do is align the magnets with the strings. So your idea of twisting them to make the fit was right. But in modern instruments, people just take what's made and build it.
Yeah.
We were always willing, even on guitar, to build custom string spacings. And only, like Jimmy has these, what we call HB6. They were maybe around 1999 or 2000 design, where we actually rebuilt the idea of the pickup so we could make all the parts. And then we could make whatever we wanted. If we had to stick within Gibson's format, then we couldn't do it because mm-hmm. we'd have to mold and we'd have to do all kinds of things that would just be too difficult in a custom pickup. So we changed the design and took out many things that we felt were problems, like string spacing, like microphonics. And then we also were able to build the pickup so we could get different kinds of output that were unavailable in the standard humbucker. And then all kinds of tapping options so that you could do other things like tap the pickup so that you could get a humbucker between the neck and the bridge
mm-hmm.
that was effective, not one that was like where they just split the two bobbins and hooked them up. That doesn't necessarily do the canceling. You have to actually design it to do it.
Well, speaking about, we're gonna try to get through some of this stuff. I'm sure is urban legend, but I'm gonna ask you some questions of what I've heard of stuff. One of them is, and we're going to talk about the split coil in 1 second, but what I want to ask you is, one of the things we noticed when like companies like DiMarzio had come out with Super Distortion, they were like really into high gain pickups. Mm-hmm. We noticed that there was no top end and stuff, and we noticed that the PAF style pickup that was around had more tone. So I was always of the impression that the less output, the more tone. But we were talking a little bit before the show. I want to go through that. What is your opinion of that? Is that a myth? Am I wrong? Or is that...
It kind of depends upon the configuration that you're talking about, because pickups are different. You know, if it's a humbucker or a single coil, or how it's constructed, or the magnet that it's made from. But in general, if a pickup has too low an output, it's just dead. And so up to a certain point going down, you can keep the color. But then below that, there's just not enough. It doesn't make the instrument sound any better. And I should mention also that my real philosophy starting with it is that it's the instrument that makes the pickup, not the pickup that mm-hmm. makes the instrument. And we try to design pickups that have a frequency response that's broader than that instrument. So whatever is in the instrument is captured by the pickup. It's a fidelity design mm-hmm. rather than like having a subset of the frequency response. So mm-hmm. getting back to your question, if you overwind pickups, we find that they are actually over-exaggerated in the high end. And the reason is because you're building up this very large capacitor, and all of a sudden, the frequencies start to skirt around the pickup because the path to the output is better through the insulation than it is through the winding, because there's more resistance there in the winding than there is in the capacitor you've built. So you start to over-exaggerate the high when you wind it too mm-hmm. much, is what we find. And so there's a balance between, you know, I always tell people, go, I need a really hot pickup. I go, turn your amp up. And we try to make pickups that if you play them hard with a standard input stage of an amp, what's been standard pretty much in all time, that you nearly clip the amp if it's a hot pickup. But don't. We don't want to clip the amp. And there are situations where that fails. I have a very resonant guitar. And the first pickup I ever put in it, it was my standard pickup, Tele, mm-hmm. clipped, and so I downwound that pickup. That was necessary. So you can see how the instrument affected what I did. Mm-hmm. And that's what I sort of expect my customers to talk to me about, because they come to me with problems, and I'm trying. You know, what I try to do is solve the problem. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you another thing, and then I want to play a cup, show some of these pickups. Mm-hmm. Is the other thing is I've not heard a guitar that really satisfied me when you split coil the humbuckers, because when you split them, yeah, you get the single coil, but they never sounded as good as a good Strat pickup or a good Tele pickup, and. Why is that? Or you told me before the show that you can get that. You can get a humbucker to split, and it'll sound as good as any single coil split.
Absolutely. And the way we do it is different than everybody else. The idea of splitting a humbucker was to get a single coil, obviously. Mm-hmm. And a humbucker is what we call a series humbucker. It's two coils, like you take two batteries and you stack them on top of each other, plus, minus, and then you get a higher voltage. And so that's a series humbucker. And so when you have the full humbucker, you have a lot more output, twice as much basically, not quite, but almost twice as much as you would with any one of the bobbins. So then when you split them, and that's exactly the word we use for it, you end up with half the output. And so there were various pickup companies that I watched over the years do things like people would complain that the single coil was too low. So they would wind both bobbins halfway to a single coil, and then you put them together as a humbucker and it was too loud, and you split them and it wasn't loud enough. Or then they would go the other way and they wind them both as single coils and they put them together in series, and it would be this monster jump in hump canceling, mm-hmm. in humbucking, and then in single coil it would just be a single coil. And so it never worked. So what we did is we wound a one bobbin like you would normally wind it, and the other bobbin the same way, and then on the same bobbin wound again. So and you use the tap for the humbucker, and you use the full wind for the single coil. So when you go to a single coil pickup, it is a single coil pickup. And when you go to the humbucking pickup, it is a humbucking pickup. There was never a
So you have two different windings for each.
Exactly.
That's cool. Yeah. That's very cool.
And we did that a lot. We have many, many models. There's a way of doing it in parallel, a way of doing it in series. There's one that we call a coil-tapped version where that's what we were just talking about for a humbucker, where you tap one coil. Then there's one where you tap both coils. We call it coil-tap parallel series. There's a dummy coil where you leave one bobbin dead, and that's for other reasons. And then there's a what we call a soap bar P, which is just for bass, where you it's a P-bass pickup, a real P-bass pickup in a soap bar. And the advantage is that you can't do that in any other way for like 5-string or 7-string
right.
or whatever.
So. Well, let's take a listen to Jimmy brought in his D'Angelico. And these are, which pickups are these?
This is the HB6.
HB6.
And again, it's custom string spacing, and it's basically a wind reminiscent of output that would be for like a Les Paul. That would be the...
Okay, and now these are just straight humbuckers. You're not using any tapping or anything?
No, nothing like that.
Is it a little hot?
I think you're good. You're okay. Now, which pickup is that?
Neck.
Neck pickup.
Both? And then,
treble? It's a real rich, rich sound, and a lot of tone in there.
That's the guitar. That's okay. What you're listening to. Like I said, most pickup manufacturers want to tell you it's the pickup because they want you to buy a pickup. I tell people that, you know, you should check your guitar before you buy an Aero pickup, because if the guitar doesn't have an intrinsically good acoustic sound, and it's not better, your acoustic sound's not better than your current sound, then when you put in the pickup, you're not going to get anything. A piece of plywood with a pickup is still just a piece of plywood.
So now you know when you have a crappy guitar, if it doesn't sound good through your pickups, done.
Yeah. That's right. Well, people actually buy Aero pickups. Dave and I were talking about this before. They put them in their instrument and they go, you know, I love the sound of your pickup, and now all the defects in my instrument showed up and I got to sell this thing. You know? So
yeah,
that happens more than you think.
No, that's true, but there are guys that do, you know, they do the Frankenstein thing. They'll put in a slab of wood and they'll do some amazing stuff, I have to admit. But that thing sounds great. I mean, those pickups sound well. Now, he's playing it really clean. We can't crank it up in the studio, so I can't really show the tonality you can get when you really break it up. Because that's another thing, too. That type of pickup, from what I'm hearing there, I know that if I was playing at a higher volume or I was using, you know, a more rock and roll type thing, you could pull a lot of harmonics and tone out of those pickups.
Oh, yeah.
They sound really full range and clear.
Really?
And the inner voices, when you're playing the chord melody, when you're playing a lot of the comping, you can hear the inner voices. And that's another thing I've noticed on good pickups. You can lose that sometimes.
No, that's absolutely true.
Sounds great. Now, let's I want to talk a little bit. We have some very interesting clips and stuff on, because when I was talking to David about the bass playing this morning, he's like, I use several different pickups and for different reasons. And all of your pickups, if I'm correct, are all Alnico magnets, right?
Pretty much, yeah. We sort of standardized on a range of mags that we felt worked. And you were asking me before, if you'd like, I can elaborate a little.
Yes, yes.
Basically, the best compromise of magnet that we have found is Alnico 5. And the reason is because its magnetic field is not so strong that it sucks the string in, but it's strong enough that you can actually adjust the pickup into a point where it senses the string correctly. And there's a... Everyone has found when they adjust their pickup too close to the string that you get that warbly sound. But the other side of that is if you adjust it too far away, you lose your bass response. So there's a window within which the pickup should be adjusted. The stronger the magnet, the farther away from the string that window becomes. And so, for instance, with Alnico 2, it's much closer than it is with Alnico 5. And other magnet materials, like people use neodymium, it's impossible to adjust that magnet to the point where you've got the right frequency response and it's not sucking the string in. It's just too strong. On the other side, the ceramic magnets, they're too weak. And by the time you adjust the pickup up to where you have to, it's so close to the string that you can't play. And people don't do that, obviously. They adjust it further down and they get what they get. But they lose some bass response in the process. And so we tried to balance that, settled on Alnico 5 as our best material. And we find actually that it works in everything. You can build a pickup for almost any instrument. And, you know, we've built them for bouzouki, chapin stick, mandolins. I mean, you kind of name a string instrument.
Right.
Resonator guitars.
The Alnico number, the higher the number, is that the more Gauss, or is it, how does that work?
No, that's another misnomer. I don't know exactly the engineer that designed them, but, you know, I'm sure he came up with a formula and just named it 1 and then came up with another formula and named it 2. And, you know, it didn't matter what it was. It just was the next product, it seems. That's the way it was. And because Alnico 5 is much stronger than Alnico 2 by about 2 to 1. Mm-hmm. And Alnico 3 is like 20% less than Alnico 2. And actually, Dave and I were talking about this. There's some Alnico 3 that comes in from China that's more like Alnico 5 than it is Alnico 3, which is terrible. And so a lot of the Alnico 3 pickups are probably wrong because nobody measures. You know, I have tools that measure the Gauss of the pickup, the magnet, and make sure that it's right. And so as far as picking something, you know, when we choose an Alnico, we're usually say, okay, Alnico 5, that's what you need. If the guy goes a little bit further and says, you know, I'm really looking for something and I got this kind of instrument, and he's more like a guy like David or Jimmy who's been playing a long time, they've had some experience with things and you can talk to them about other things. A guy who's 18, there's no sense. You know, so.
Well, one of the things that you just brought up is, you know, like some of the materials that were like from China, they're not correctly labeled. In making pickups, the raw materials that you get, I know, like I was saying before the show, that, you know, with pedals and effects pedals, they have a big problem getting consistent chips and stuff like that. In terms of the Alnico magnet material or any of the other materials that you use in making the pickups, is it pretty consistent, the quality, or is it difficult getting good material?
I'm told by the people that make magnet material that I get that there's a 2% failure rate, so that 2% of my magnets should just not work. And I find it's more like 0.1%. It's really very small. And so, I mean, I just wave a Gauss meter over it, or I have another calibrated device that's easier to use sometimes, and I'll know that everything is right and that everything magnetized or whatever. We actually are unique in the industry in many respects in that I built most of the tools that I use. So I built a magnetizer, so I buy stock that's unmagnetized, and it allows me to have more control over the process because I know what I'm magnetizing to. I
can. Oh, that's, you know, so you magnetize it yourself. That's
every,
pretty cool.
Yeah, every pickup, and we do it for a lot of reasons that I don't really want to talk about. But it's really much better for us. And we also buy rod stock and bar stock, and we cut it. We have a machine that I'm able to cut magnets. So when a guy wants a custom radius or something like that, we're making the custom radius for them, where, again, nobody wants to do that because if they're buying pre-cut magnetized material, it's a mess to do anything with it. So,
well, the other thing I want to mention, and we talked about this, and I want to make this clear because I was told before, I know people have had like PAF pickups, the early humbuckers, and some of them have lost their, you know, they said they go out. They were going out. And I had asked you about the life of a pickup, and you had told me that the Alnico should last a long time.
Yeah.
So, but that tells you then that they were, back then, the materials weren't that consistent. And the reason I want to throw this in is I want to mention that Aero repairs old pickups.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So they can fix them if they have to rewind them or, you know, replace them.
Magnetize them or whatever, sure.
So.
Yeah, you're hitting on a good subject in the sense that either the material could have been bad in the PAF, or it just could have been improperly magnetized. And if you improperly magnetize a magnet, it'll lose its magnetic field indiscriminately. In fact, it's very weird what happens. Sometimes it'll just drop down halfway, and then you'll measure it again later, and it'll be high again, mm-hmm. and you'll think it's just fine. And eventually, though, it'll lose its charge. And Alnico 5, the half-life that is about 100 years, so half the magnet should lose their charge. So most people should never have lost a pickup, you know, 60 years later or 70 years later, whatever we're in. You know, some pickups, I guess, are from the 30s, but I don't know the materials necessarily. But anyway, so if that happened, you really just have to remagnetize the magnet. It should be fine. In fact, that's what I tell people. I say, look, you know, our quality is good enough if the half-life's 100 years that the pickup should last that long, and in 100 years you can send it to me and I'll remagnetize it for you, you know?
Yeah, so. It's past our lifetime, yes.
For someone to discover and turn it on 100 years
yeah.
later.
No, but that's important because I know people have had old pickups that have failed. Yeah. And I have a guitar with PAFs on it, and it sounds good, but I hear that I can't swear by it, but I think its output's a little less. It's not as
weaker.
A little weaker, mm-hmm. But
it's actually something I wanted to say. It's really not a good idea to demagnetize a magnet. A lot of people do that. The reason magnets were invented as Alnico 2 and Alnico 3 was because engineers were trying to find stable lower output magnets,
mm-hmm.
and this idea that you're going to make a stable magnet out of Alnico 5 at some lower Gauss is a fiction. It just doesn't work. It makes them, as we were talking about, unstable, and they lose their charge or they go up and down, and you'll never have a consistent pickup. One of the things I pride Aero on is that we can, if I built a pickup for you in 1994, if you wanted that same pickup and you read me that serial number, I can probably build exactly that pickup for you today, same one. I may even have the original materials that I built it at because I tend to save piles of material. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm running out, but I've had spools of wire from the 50s. I mean, they're on wooden spools. And so a guy wants a wire from the 50s. You know, I try to accommodate. Some of that is getting so old that it's stuck together, mm-hmm. or it's just corroded and breaking, you know, but it's life. So.
Now, I want to get into I want to talk with David and these different pickups. Before that, real quick, give us your rundown of, in terms of sound, you explained the difference of technically of what the Alnico 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Give it to us in your terms of tone, and then I want to turn it over to David. And I want to know how you look at it when you use what this pickup does for you, what this one does for you. And we have clips we can play. But go ahead and start real quick.
I would describe it in terms of linearity. Alnico 5 is the most linear material probably you can get. And without explaining exactly why, it has to do with the height of its flux column and how straight the lines are. But anyway, Alnico 2 is much less linear, and Alnico 3 is less linear than that. And when your ear hears the non-linearity, it's basically, if you look at the waveform, it's distorted. It's compressed in places, and what usually happens is when in a situation like that is you're losing bass response. And sometimes, though, the human ear, it's a funny thing, when it hears these distortions, it's actually pleasing. And so Alnico 2 has given people an opportunity to have pretty good linearity, but this kind of distortion that's pleasing to the ear. And it makes people think there's more bass response. But when I listen back to recordings of it, and you know, you have them, you'll hear it's more distorted than the Alnico 5.
Right. Well, just to give a perspective, like the traditional P bass pickup or the traditional jazz bass pickup, is that an Alnico 2?
No, Alnico 5.
That's an Alnico 5.
And part of it, maybe Dave and I were talking about it, but I'm not sure this is true, but maybe they were just improperly magnetized to begin with.
Right.
And so they had some lower output that was causing them to be more distorted. P bass pickups are a different game. P-bass pickups have a mechanical reason why they are what they are, then, and I have a theory for it. I don't want to state it. I mean,
that's okay. Not,
yeah, but it's something I suppose that.
Well, what would be an example of a conventional pickup that musicians would know as an Alnico 2? Would that be like a Rickenbacker pickup? Would that be like?
That's interesting.
I mean, what would describe? I mean, we'll play one of David's guitars.
As far as I know, and I'm not sure that I'm correct, but as far as I know, nobody really used Alnico 2 as by choice.
Okay.
I think it was later. And, I mean, there may have been people experimenting with it. I mean, I'm sure that the factories that made early instruments knew about it. But Alnico 2 is, I think, actually a later invention in guitar. I'm not sure if it's a later, I'm not sure if it's a later material in time.
Like a Gibson EB3 with the big humbucker, the old one like that, would that be an Alnico 5 too?
That was an Alnico 5.
Much that's what everybody was using.
I can't say an EB3, but I've taken apart EBO. In fact, Aero makes a guts replacement for an EBO. And all the mags that I've ever pulled out and measured are Alnico 5. And,
okay.
And sometimes actually to get at them, I have to magnetize them to find out what they are when they're properly magnetized.
Even with Music Man, GNL, those are all nickel 5?
Music Man, I'm not sure of all the GNL stuff. You know, there's so many different manufacturers, I wouldn't know them all. But Music Man, absolutely. The old original Stingray was an Alnico 5 rod magnet 3/8 of an inch in diameter by 1 inch long. It was mm-hmm. a huge magnet with a very strong field.
Okay.
Non-linear field.
Now, let me ask you one other question, then we'll get to Dave. I'm sorry, David. There's just too many things that are popping in my head. How does the type of pickup, the magnet, affect active and passive bass electronics?
Oh, it's the same. Active basses, let's just take one step back. There is no such thing as an active pickup. EMG, it's a bunch of junk. It's marketing. Active means you add energy to the system. And it's a misnomer. They use it as a marketing tool. It's really disturbing to me. So when you have an active bass, you basically have a passive pickup, and the EMG is included in this, and a preamp of some kind. And that makes it active. If you add energy, if you have a battery, that's active. So Aero pickups are designed to work as just by themselves, passively, or with active electronics. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you hook it up to. You can compromise them by hooking them up to electronics that have too low an input impedance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, in general, the rule is when you have a voltage source, you want the voltage source to have as low an impedance as possible and the receiving end to have as high, so you can get as much signal through as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And since pickups are basically voltage sources, that's what you want to do. And so as far as an active or passive, it doesn't matter. The thing that does matter, and we talked about this a little bit, is if the battery is involved, it has a certain resistance in it that's going to cause a certain distortion in the bass response. It's like when a guitar player has a power supply that's too small,
mm-hmm.
it'll cause low notes played hard that need lots of current to not be able to play,
mm-hmm.
not totally correctly. And in certain cases, if the preamp is compromised enough, not really at all. It'll wreck the guy's timing because it's actually sagging every time he hits the note because he's hitting it so hard or something.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, well let's talk to David. I want to talk a little bit about, you use a lot of different pickups, a lot of the Aero pickups on all of your basses. You have several basses, and I just want to mention that. David is one of the in-demand guys in Vegas. He does a lot of the main shows, and he does a lot of different gigs. So he's doing stuff that might be trio all the way to with full orchestra. So can you kind of give me a little bit of what you – of the different pickups and what you like using them for, what you find that it's important?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to take it at step one, and you have to think about what – instrument the pickup is going to go into,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a real not often thought about factor as far as bass is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Now guitar is just the opposite. Why that is, I'm not sure, but if you look at any of these boutique bass manufacturers, most of them, it's very elaborate as far as from the woodworking standpoint. But when it comes to electronics, okay, we got the pickups, yeah, and that's basically as far as it goes. And it's – and actually, this show made me stop and think about that where, it needs to – it's a whole system. So the pickups should be working in tandem with the type of wood and the type of instrument that you have, the kind of response that you have, and the type of player that you are.
Right.
So that's like a, you know, if people were to put more attention upon the type of pickup that they had in the instrument might be much more responsive than you can ever realize. But that's like a, just a completely, like, people are just bypassing that aspect of the electronics in the instrument.
Because your basses, you're using specific woods, and you had them made to certain specifications, right?
Right. You know, it's, you know, years ago, I guess, you know, I mean, when people look at a solid body guitar, they don't look at it as a functioning acoustic instrument, and it really is. I mean, it can be where if the guitar is so resonant at a frequency, it'll almost suck the, you know, you get dead spots. I mean, it can be almost in reverse.
Right.
Or if it's the right mixture of woods, it seems very lively, and it actually imparts a sound. So, I mean, it's not really just an electric guitar. It's an acoustic instrument also that is working in tandem with the pickups. So having said that, having the right type of pickups on a bass is so important, because what happens is a lot of guys don't realize is, you know, people think, you know, quantity is the main thing. But, you know, I'm sure you being a guitar player, you start to realize that lower output seems to be much more musical. And so with a pickup, if the pickup is too close, you're actually going to have like a deadening effect on the string. It's actually, because the fact of how the magnet works, it's actually stopping the string from vibrating.
Yeah, we used to try to push this when we'd adjust our strats, and we'd move the pickup up to get more gain. And one time I got it too close, and I started playing, and literally the string just stuck to the magnet.
Right.
So I had to lower it back down.
So, you know, so with basses, I was just telling Larry that, you know, I mean, this is a factor. I mean, I just started thinking about, but it's, if the instrument seems a little dead, it would make sense to me to use a lower output pickup and adjust the pickup a little farther away. Because, you know, I have his Alnico 3s, 2s, and 5s. And, I mean, people tell you, oh, 3s are, like, really weak. You know what? I haven't found that. And I almost try to adjust the pickup as far away as possible, so that it almost makes the string as lively as possible, because that's what you want.
Okay.
You know, you want the...
Well, let me ask you, between the different Alnicos, tonality in terms of frequency response, what is the difference in your ear?
Well, I mean, the 5 is definitely most accurate, most firm in the low end. And so for, like, most situations, if people are not sure about what they want, it's exactly what Larry said. You know,
okay.
5 is, you know, that's where you want to start. Now, as you get to the more esoteric type of instruments and or, like, you know, what guys are terming as, like a vintage type of instrument response, then that's when I would go to something like a 2, where it's a little bit more inaccurate on the extremes, but it almost musically, sonically, it kind of manifests itself in a way that it sounds sweeter, you know, because you have, like what he was talking about, you have this, like, slight distortion that if you're really listening, it actually sounds musical. I mean, it is very desirable.
Well, would you use like an Alnico 2 in a situation where you had maybe a group where a music situation where you had synth bass or you had other instruments that are on the low end? Would you use that to be in the pocket more, or would you use, you know, do you look at it that way?
I mean, for me, like, I have this work bass that I term it as, and that has the 5s in it, because for all around type of situation, bass that can fit in any situation.
It's your goat.
Yeah.
I mean, first goat.
You know, it might not be the best in every situation, but it's going to work in every situation. Whereas once you start to get specialized, then it might really excel in one area. But if you go to something else, it might.
Oh,
not,
okay. Yeah. So you have the first call one, and then you'll pull out the other basses as you need for special things?
Yeah. You know, it just depends on the job and then the type of music I'm playing, mm-hmm. and then that pretty much dictates, you know, like the type of instrument, and mm-hmm. then, you know, then the type of instrument and the type of strings.
Right.
You know, if you're playing like just fingers, or you're playing with a pick even. And so, you don't have to look at it that specialized, but, you know, it's all in the details to me.
Well, it's important because you play so many different styles.
Uh-huh.
So you're called into situations. I'm a firm believer, not one guitar can't do it all. You have to have more than one guitar.
I've learned.
And consequently, I collect. So, but same thing with bass. I just don't think it
right.
handles
well, you know,
it.
And that's why, I it's always amusing when I see guys and they're getting this one instrument and they think this is going to be the end all. It's going to do everything, you know? And,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can have an instrument that's great, but not one instrument is going to fit for everything if you really want to get down to
yeah.
like the real nuance of like a...
Well, let's take a listen. I want to, because we're almost out of time. Yeah. I told you to go fast.
Why don't you play the clip that says Alnico 5-1?
Alnico 5-1. Okay, I'm going to play that right now.
I mean, it's short.
Is that it?
I think
that's it. It's got that bottom end, and it's pop. You're getting all that. And so, that's your work, Ben.
Yeah, so now play the Alnico 2-1.
Alnico 2-1.
So that's this bass. It's a little bit more vintage. On you know what? I think you might have played the wrong one. But it's supposed to be 5-1.
Yeah, Alnico 5-1. That was it.
Really?
It's labeled 5-1.
Oh, okay.
Want me to try 5-2?
Okay.
I mean, what I'm noticing is it's punchier. The low end is coming out in your face more, but it still has the top end.
Maybe try 3-1.
3-1?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
And see this, you can hear.
This feels like a P bass to me. It kind of has that mid range type of.
So, you know, so that's a redwood instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So you can feel it has a little bit more like hair on it. You know, it feels like it's less defined on the extremes. You know.
Yeah, it's more mid rangey, not as much top, not as much bottom. Yeah.
More sustained though, too, because the field is weaker.
Right.
So. Oh, okay.
And that's something that people like. Like, I play games with that all the time when I'm designing pickup systems. Like, if a guy has like double dual coils in Alnico 5 for bass,
mm-hmm.
then. And he's feeling like the bass is too constrained, it doesn't ring enough for him. Well, you do the same thing, and you do double dual coils in Alnico 2. It's having like two single coil pickups in Alnico 5. So that, you know, because every pickup pulls on the string.
Mm-hmm.
So now the string rings a little bit longer, even though you have double dual coils. So, you know, this mm-hmm. is what we're talking about, you know, filling what the customer wants in terms of his sound. But I do want to say that... I magnet shape is an effect that I use. These pickups that Dave has have two pole pieces per string.
Mm-hmm.
We make single pole piece per string pickups in two basic shapes, a rectangular shape that has the same area, playing area, as the double dual coil,
mm-hmm.
and a single quarter inch diameter magnet. And there are effects that come from that for guys who play harmonics, who tap, who play fretless instruments, or even guys who bow. I mean, not obviously on an electric instrument like this, but anything where the string is constrained in its movement. And if you play a harmonic, the string is moving very little. And in a double two-pole piece per string system, it's playing over the dead spot where the magnet isn't. So its output is very low. So if you change it to a single pole piece where the highest output of the magnet is over the center, the output is very high, and it changes.
Right.
Guys who tap, you know, out notes, it changes their the way that their hand has to move because it's less energy to get the same.
Dave, when you bend, do you notice get gain when you move the string?
That's not something they do a lot of, but yeah, I mean, I guess you're talking about like.
Yeah, you can hear it.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at it in an oscilloscope, what you see for this pickup with two pole pieces per string is a peak. Mm-hmm. If you're just playing a single note, and the peak will have like a cut in it in the center, like a camel with two humps.
Right.
If you look at the single pole piece, it has just a peak.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really plays different. And it's actually, people have actually said, well, you know, I don't like the single pole piece per string because I lost my jazz bass sound.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because that's what they've been listening to for 50 years, you know.
Right,
so
right.
They have that sound in their head.
Well, quick question: that Elnico 3 that clip that we played, would that be the type of pickup you would choose for a fretless to get a fretless sound?
Yeah.
Because that reminded me of that type of
right.
that type of sound, or an upright to like duplicate like an upright.
I mean, the Elnico 3 is loaded in an old growth redwood MTD. Five-string Saratoga, so it's very acoustic sounding, and it's able to. It's interesting bass pickup combination because it's able to. You can play soft, and it has a lot of nuance, but you can lay into it,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't bottom out. So it actually affords you if you have that kind of playing style to like track like a wide dynamic range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of guys. That doesn't appeal to them. But if you're the type of guy that has that kind of element in your playing, I think mm-hmm. something like that goes a long way.
Yeah. No, I agree. We got about a couple of minutes left. One of the things I don't want to forget is you brought another thing that you make that has it's not a pickup. I want you to explain this because this is a new product that you're coming out
That's
with.
That's right. Yeah, we're patenting this product. It's a... What I call a D-Buzz, and it's basically just what we call a brass coin at the end of the cable here, and you basically slip the brass coin between your underwear and your body and plug that into your guitar, and any noise that your guitar is making because you took your hand off the string will disappear.
We've all experienced that where you let your hand off and all of a sudden...
But I mean really disappear.
Grounded through
right.
our body?
Can I use that on my 14-year-old?
Yeah, and I wanted to say also that there's a really good review of my dual coils coming out in Bass Player in the January issue
great.
For December. It's written by John Herrera, and it's very favorable towards us, so people should pick that up and read it. Or at least
I also want to mention, everybody go to www.aeroinstrumentsingular.com.
That's great.
You can get an idea of some of the different pickups that he makes. And he makes pickups not just for bass and guitar, but for ukulele.
Yeah.
And he made for pedal steel, which
pedal
I think
steel,
is really
steel.
Cool.
Yep.
So there's more. There's a lot more. Chapman stick.
Okay.
But he also, you know, as I said, he can repair and restore your pickups. So if you have, if somebody gave you some PAFs that are originally... that are not working, he can make them and restore them to the probably very, very close to the original sound. And he does all sorts of types of repair. Because, I mean, if you're not sure, call him because he's worked on amps, he's worked on guitars. And the other thing I want to really stress too is he's a guitar player. So to me, most of the successful companies, the original guys were guitar players, so they know what we're talking about. And I think that's very, very important. I also want to mention with Jimmy, soulguitarist.com. It's his website. He gives free video lessons, and he does a bunch of free stuff. They have contests. They have all sorts of very cool things.
I'm signing up for some free lessons.
Take advantage of them. Can you hear me? This
yes.
A couple of cool things coming up this Friday at the Pacific Design Center, open to the public. I'm playing for a beautiful art opening. Javiera Estrada. From Acapulco, myself and Tony Dumas on bass. So that's at the Pacific Design Center, 6:30 to 9:30 Friday night. And then following week with my soul band at the Seabird in Long Beach. And then Saturday night, having a chance to play with the great Bruce Lett on bass and the master drummer, Denny Dennis. So
very, very cool.
All good, Ben.
Now, David, how can people check out more what you're doing? Anything coming up in shows that they can come see you? And how can they find you on the internet?
Well, at this point, they can't find me on the internet.
Do you do that?
But let's see. I'm off Thursday working with a band out of Vegas called the Australian BG Show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I also work with Eddie Levert from the OJs.
Oh, for sure. Oh, wow.
And then I also work with a really great sax player that's here in Los Angeles, Michael Paolo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So,
I know him now.
Yeah, and then I also work with a Filipino singing star, Lonnie Misalucia, and Arnel Pineda.
Pineda from Journey.
Yeah, so wow. I was just in Chicago with them.
Oh, okay, very cool, very cool.
So it's like whoever wants to hire me.
He's a gun for hire, that's it. Thank you guys all again for being on. Obviously, there's another show here. We have to have you guys come back. And I want to do a show just on you, David, because there's a whole thing there. And the different things that you play, the different situations, it's invaluable to know how to handle that kind of stuff. So at some point, I want to get you back on here. And Susan, real quick, what are you up to? Anything coming up?
I will be at the Sagebrush Cantina November 6th doing my acoustic soul everything. And January 14th, I'll be opening for David Lindley.
Very cool.
He does a lot of acoustic instruments.
We love you.
So anyway, thank you so much. And everybody, have a great week. And Larry, I just can't thank you so much for coming in here. I learned a lot today about these pickups. It's very, very, very cool.
Very engaging.
Okay, everybody, have a great night, and we will see you next week.